Good afternoon. Today I'll be presenting our work on application memory isolation on ultra-low power MCUs. This is in collaboration with Dartmouth College, Northwestern University, and Clemson University. Those of you who are not too familiar with the space might be wondering why we care, why we don't just use bigger chips that are capable of memory isolation. Well, for better or for worse, many wearables and IoT devices today require extended battery lives to be considered useful, and to achieve this, they have to employ the use of low-power microcontrollers, which in and of itself is generally not a problem. Problems do arise, however, when these devices wish to support multi-application environments. Basically, they want to run many applications on one device at the same time. Applications which, of course, may be dealing with sensitive user information, right? And whether you're a user or a developer, you'd like a guarantee that these applications are really only accessing and executing on data within their prescribed bounds. Unfortunately, one of the major side effects of the low power draw is that these microcontrollers are severely resource constrained in terms of memory and processing speed and just the peripheral subsystems allowed to them. One of these subsystems, which they do not have, is a memory management unit, or an MMU, the subsystem that is responsible for virtualizing memory and isolating applications. So without it, device developers are forced to implement isolation using other techniques, which has been studied, and there are many ways to do it. They typically involve things like limiting the language, removing dangerous memory operations from the language, which on one hand is good in that it doesn't incur runtime overheads and on a system that is resource constrained, that is very nice. But from a developer perspective, it can be kind of annoying having to change your programming paradigm, and it can be difficult to port code to your platform. Others who don't want to give up the full features of their language are instead opt to basically incur and accept whatever runtime overheads are associated with isolating memory at runtime with software, right? Whether it's full virtualization, or just lots of bounce checking and kind of a single address space. Further, some people also just customize hardware. They build their own hardware, right? Hardware that meets their specifications, which can be very time-consuming and financially, expensive, and just requires another set of skills. It is important to note, though, that while these microcontrollers don't have MMUs, a lot of them do come with memory protection units, or MPUs, which is basically just a watered-down version of an MMU in that it doesn't support memory virtualization, but it does sometimes support privilege levels, and it lets you set read, write, and execute permissions for segments of memory. The caveat to that being that the number of segments supported by the MPU tends to vary greatly between vendors and chips, and the actual address range which the MPU protects also varies. I think this inconsistency is not having a standard for what constitutes an MPU in terms of whether it supports privileges, what's the minimum number of segments required, and the minimum address range that it should cover. I think this inconsistency has kind of prevented developers from incorporating or trying to incorporate the MPU with their memory isolation solutions. Despite this, though, we think that utilizing the capabilities provided by the MPU, whatever they might be, we might be able to relax the language restrictions and achieve better runtime performance than other solutions. We start with the open source platform Amulet. It's a wearable device that supports a multi-application environment and runs on a low-power microcontroller that does provide an MPU. Currently, its application memory isolation scheme involves using compile-time analysis to restrict language features. And those features include pointers, recursion, go-to statements, and inline assembly. In some cases where memory safety cannot be assured, such as array accesses, they insert runtime bounce checks. And so our goal is to leverage the capabilities of the MPU on this device to allow for the use of pointers and recursion, and hopefully achieve better runtime performances. First, let's look at what the MPU on this device actually does, though. It does not allow for privilege levels. It allows us to divide memory into three segments for which we can set read, write, and execute permissions for each. The only problem is that the address range that it protects starts at 4400, so it doesn't protect anything below that address. And if we look at the memory map, we see why that's a problem. So everything in green is what the MPU does protect. And currently in the AMLET system, that's basically the OS code and application code, all of their code and data. What it does not protect, though, is the stack, a stack that is shared by the OS and applications, as well as the microcontroller's configuration registers. And those basically control things like clock speed, timers, communication buses, ADC data, and they also control the MPU. So any application with a pointer there could really just unlock the MPU and then have access to the entire address space. So the question is, you know, what can we do with this? You know, assuming we can prevent them from accessing this, could we use the MPU and the protection it offers to the higher address space to gain some runtime performance and allow for these language features? And so the main things that we need to prevent are memory accesses in which applications are accessing or reading data, right? We need to ensure that this data is only within their bounds and that it's not not outside of the memory, the MPU's protection region. We need to watch indirect function calls, so they're only executing the code they should be executing. And we also need to watch context switches. Applications can call OS functions and pass them data, and we want to make sure that they're not trying to get the OS to basically execute memory violations that they can't. With this in mind, we came up with a modified memory model. This is kind of a lot to look at, but in the previous model, if you recall, all of this was just OS code and app code, and they were intermixed. And so the first thing we did was we split them up. So every application has its own code segment, and it also has its own stack and data segment. So we gave every application its own stack because there was no good way to basically prevent stack corruption and reading and tampering with the current MPU's capabilities. So right now, what you're looking at is the MPU segment configuration for application one, assuming application one is running, right? So again, our MPU allows us three memory segments. The top one up here we set to have no permissions, meaning that when application one is running, if it tries to access, read, write, or execute anything in this area, the MPU will throw an error and call a handler function. And then within this region, where it has read and write permissions, is its stack and data. And the important distinction here is that the data is actually above the stack. The reason for this is that the stack is growing down towards this boundary, which is what allows us to allow recursion, right? If the stack overflows, it hits this MPU boundary, which triggers an MPU fault. Again, similar to up here. And then here we have the application code, and that's where it gets a little bit complicated in that since we only have three segments, we're not able to just sandbox the application's code. You'll notice that it's with the OS's code and data. And while the OS data is protected from read and write, it could still execute OS code. Along with that, we haven't really addressed the fact that they could still read and write all down here. And it's for this reason that we need to supplement the MPU with runtime checks. Basically, every time it's performing a memory access, we need to ensure that that is above this 4400 bound, right? And that every time it's making an indirect call, it's above its lower application code's bound. So basically what the MPU is doing is it's removing one of those bounds checks, right? If we didn't have it, we'd have to check on either side to ensure that it was sandboxed. Just to reiterate, the MPU is preventing memory accesses and indirect calls above the current app's memory space, And then we're using runtime software checks to handle accesses and direct calls below the current apps memory space. Each application has its own stack so that it can recurse and overflow if it so chooses. And we also have to use runtime software checks to verify the return address because they do have access to their stack. Now that we have our model, we need to update the Amulet platform to reflect that. And so the Amulet platform uses a compile time tool known as the Amulet Firmware Toolchain, or AFT, which analyzes, transforms, merges, and compiles applications into one firmware image. So basically, where the memory isolation is currently happening is the analyzer and translator. That's where the default setting is to basically look for all these restricted language operations and throw an error when it sees that, and also to rewrite these array accesses. And so this is analyzer and translator. This is the portion that we updated to implement our MPU model. So basically, every time we see memory access, we have to insert a bounce check or see if the MPU can handle it. And you know, every time we see a context switch, we have to reconfigure the MPU for switching to a different context. For evaluation, you'll see we have three different versions of the firmware toolchain, which represent three different memory isolation models. So the first one is the default Amulet model, which again implements isolation via language restrictions and some runtime bounce checks. Our model, which is purely runtime isolation using the MPU and runtime bounce checks. And we also created a third, which is basically the same as the MPU, except that where the MPU would normally protect one of those sides of the accesses, we now insert another runtime bounce check. So it effectively has twice as many checks as the MPU. Another tool in the Amulet platform is the Amulet Resource Profiler, which runs on top of MSP430SIM and exposes cycle counts. For code, so we can basically simulate applications using these different memory models and estimate what their overheads might be. And because the cycle counts also have direct energy costs, we can estimate the battery impact of each. So here are the results of that. You'll see the default Amulet implementation in red, our implementation in blue, and the software only in green, with the cycle overhead on the right and battery impact, cycle overhead on the left and battery impact on the right in percent. And if you're wondering why it looks like our model did the worst on everyone, it's because it did. We fully expected that Amulet would perform the fastest in terms of runtime overheads because most of its isolation happens at compile time. But we were kind of confused as to why the software-only model, which has twice as many checks, is still performing faster than the MPU. And looking back at the code and the profile of the applications, we realized that the overhead for context switching with the MPU, where we have to reconfigure the MPU every time, is just so much higher than the other methods that is what is slowing it down. And most of these applications are pretty heavy on context switches and don't do too much computation, right? So in our actual deployment, what we did was we chose some applications that were extremely heavy on memory accesses and didn't make that many context switches. And you can see that it performed well. It actually did better in, there's still Amulet in red, MPU in blue, and software only in green. And so now the MPU is actually outperforming everyone when we're running in applications with a high number of memory accesses as opposed to context switches. So the takeaways are that an MPU can provide performance benefits over other methods and applications with a high frequency of memory accesses and a low number of context switches. And even though the MPU was not effective for applications with a higher number of context switches, it's still had less than a 0.5% impact on battery life for all applications. Questions?
very interesting. So Matt Stock from Limelight Networks. So I'm trying to understand some of the constraints that the system imposes itself. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that essentially no like assembly level kind of code is allowed, because
so
otherwise
we still haven't allowed for inline assembly in GoTo.
Okay.
That was just at the time too hard to keep track of, you know, with our compile time tool. It was just too much work for our scope.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
Sure.
You didn't say anything about the impact on the programming style of mm-hmm. your approach.
Sure.
Did you try some experiments where you took like existing code that was targeting the original?
So the idea was that basically the default amulet, which prevents pointers and recursion, mm-hmm. actually impedes the programming style more than ours. Ours is actually mm-hmm. kind of freeing you up to port code over easier.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't. That was one of the reasons we did the software-only implementation, was that it was kind of hard to quantify, hey, you have pointers and recursion now, that's great, right? I mean, how do you measure that? So.
But did you do some experiments where you had some existing emulate code and then you translated it, you made sort of the optimal version for your approach and the code was half as big, or was there some kind of advantage?
No, generally the code was larger because we were inserting extra runtime checks and MPU configuration code. Yeah.
What about the code written by the person?
In the sense that the idea was that they could write it the way they would typically write C, instead of having to limit some of the functionality the way the amulet does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.